Hey everybody, and welcome to the Jump Ball Podcast. I'm your host, Mo Dockey, and today my guest is prolific freelancer Jared Dubin. We're going to talk about all the craziness in the past week of the NBA, the Eric Bledsoe drama going off in Phoenix, and God knows what else. So, you ready to tip it off?
Yeah, I'm actually just coming back from the hair salon.
So. Were you at the salon with Eric Bledsoe? Was that why he wanted to leave?
Yeah, well, he was getting his hair done, and I was just sitting there because I don't have hair.
Gotcha. Well, I mean, he doesn't have that much to work with either himself, so, but I could see that, like, him hanging out with you would prompt that tweet of, I don't want to be here.
Yeah. I can't confirm or deny.
Okay, well, you know, now we're going to have some conspiracy theories going on here. I'll send some investigative reporters out there. We'll see what we come up with. but, Jared, we got to dive right into it. I mean, Bledsoe sends out a tweet. We're talking on a Monday. This will come out Tuesday morning. Bledsoe sends out a tweet on Sunday saying, simply just says, I don't want to be here. Nothing else. And that's it. And it's just kind of crickets after that. He meets this morning with the team. The Suns have – oh, before all that, the Suns already fired their coach, Earl Watson, in between the – after the tweet and before Bledsoe meets with the team. And now Ryan McDonough basically says, we don't buy his excuse that he was at a hair salon. We don't think he wants to be here. And we sent him home. What's going on?
Yeah. Well, you also, I think, forgot to mention maybe the most important thing is that they're 0-3 with an average margin of loss of 30.7 points a game. And what's incredible is that one of the losses was by 2 points. The other ones, like, they lost by 42 and 48 in the other two games. So, you know, things are not going well on the court, obviously. That's why they fired Earl Watson. You know, I got several thoughts on this. Like, first of all, the tweet just straight up, I don't want to be here, was incredible. Like, that's why this league is the best.
It's not even like, close.
Not even hiding it, just like, yeah, I'm done. Get me the hell out of here. Which, like, he doesn't make sense there, and it was, like, going to be a thing at some point that him and Tyson Chandler and Jared Dudley, like, don't really, other than being the guys that are teaching the young kids how to be professionals, like, they don't really fit there, and they would obviously be much better off on actual good teams. So I'm not surprised that at some point he would get traded. Obviously, having it this early in the season, things go completely off the rails is kind of crazy. You know, the first thing my head went to when I saw this report that they basically had sent him home and, you know, the hair salon or whatever was, you know, I think it was 3 years ago, they had Bledsoe, Dragic, and Isaiah Thomas on the same team, all on good contracts. And within a span of 3 years, they alienated and will have soon traded all three of them. That's crazy.
Yeah, their asset management is just absurd. Like, they did have a really good thing set up, too. They had Jeff Hornacek. They had some stuff going. And
right, and Hornacek, they fired his assistants before firing. Like, they fired two of his assistant coaches and then fired him later on.
Right, and then that's what led to Earl Watson getting the interim job, because everybody's like, well, how did he get the job in the first place? Or, like, how could you give it to him? They had nobody else to give it to.
Right.
Because of that, they fired Mike Lombardi, and I can't remember who the other one was.
Was it Jerry Siding?
Yes, I believe it was Jerry Siding as well. But they fired both those guys, and then 2 weeks later fire Hornacek, and then it's like, okay, now we're in trouble. And this goes back to, like, when they hired Lindsey Hunter over Dan Majerle, when they were letting Elvin Gentry go, and then Dan Majerle quits. I mean, the Suns have just been a clusterfuck over the past, you know, 5-10 years. I mean, it feels like they've just been really just can't get out of their own way. And you're right, like, Chandler doesn't fit there. Jared Dudley doesn't fit there. I mean, they should start exploring trading all these guys for just assets at this point and just be terrible. Just embrace that you're going to suck. But this all points to something that's bigger in my mind, which is this is just poor ownership. Mm-hmm. You know, like, this is a team that has no direction. Like, going into the season, my thing about the Suns was, like, I don't know which way they're going, like, in terms of what their plan is.
Yeah, I mean, look, that's something that you know, I saw this. I was at physical therapy when it happened, and on my way back, I was scrolling through Twitter to see what people had already written about it, and I was encouraged to see that Ben Golliver at SI, you know, came right out and said it. Robert Sarver should just sell the team. He is bad at owning a team. This is something that's been going on for years. Like, when they had their actual good teams and he didn't want to spend money and they kept just selling draft picks, like draft picks that became Rajon Rondo and other guys.
Right.
It's like he wants to own the team just so people say he owns the team almost. Like, he doesn't seem to have an interest in making the team good or in, you know, crafting an actual plan on really any level. And we see it with other franchises too. The biggest problems with NBA teams always start at the top, and it's no different in Phoenix. And, you know, you see also, like, Eric Bledsoe, again, this is another guy that they're just complete, like, you see media members sometimes let go of information that they have on players whenever they leave a team. And that's, you know, a normal thing that happens. The Suns just let go of it themselves publicly.
Right.
Like they straight up ripped Channing Frye when he left. They ripped Goran Dragic. Now they're ripping Bledsoe on the way out. Like, it's just so frustrating.
And it doesn't, like, when you rip guys on the way out, it just makes it so that other guys don't want to come there. They pay attention. These dudes, the guys in the league, all pay attention to what's going on now. So, like, when you do these things, it has an effect. Like, this is what we were talking about with Phil Jackson last spring. Like, what free agent's going to sign there if he's the GM and he's been ripping Carmelo? You know, and back to Sarver, it's kind of the very much Donald Sterling-like in the way he's taking care of this team. Like, Sterling just wanted to own the team, you know, and then he found a way to make losing profitable and just kept it that way for so long.
Are the Suns profitable? Were they one of the teams? I know Zach Lowe and Brian Windhorst had that report over the summer. I don't remember.
I don't know if they are or not, but I know for a while, I'm just saying with Sterling, they were. I actually probably doubt that the Suns are profitable, although they have a pretty low payroll. But I just kind of look at it, to me, it's like I kind of feel like NBA ownership should come with a license. The NBA should license these guys, and every 15 years, their license is up for review. And if, you know, we're looking at what you've done with the team over the past 15 years. And some teams just have shitty luck and are going to be bad. But, like, there's just times where you look at the ownership going, like, what the fuck were you thinking here? What were you doing here? What was this? Why did you do that? And if they've been shitty for 15 years, they can get their license revoked and be forced to sell the team. I don't know if this is all legal in any stretch of the imagination. This is just an idea in my head that I think is great. But what do you think?
I think it sounds terrific. As someone whose owner would, someone that is a fan of a team whose owner would have been forced to sell a couple of years ago, yeah, I think it's great. I think it has a less than 0% chance.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. But it would just be an interesting. But I just feel like just we get these dudes that are owners for so long. I mean, James Dolan's one of the worst. You know, and it's like, you know, we chronicled the Sarver thing, and it's just like, God, like these guys. They just kill teams. You know, they kill runs. You know, there's only a few years a team can have a great run, and they just crush them with just being themselves sometimes.
Yeah, and look, those are, you know, you name those two owners. I don't think anybody would really dispute at this point they're the two worst in the league. Maybe you throw Vivek in there as well. But, you know, Phoenix and New York should be like destination markets for free agents. Obviously the Knicks are in New York, you know, the most famous city in the country, you know, a cultural center, media center, entertainment center. The Suns have Phoenix weather, and you know, everybody likes to play in the South where it never gets cold. You know, and they've been in the mix actually for a few free agents over the last few years, you know, LaMarcus Aldridge, and I think they met or were supposed to meet with Blake Griffin, but it never happened, or going to meet with Paul Millsap, but it never happened. But, you know, they've been connected to guys over the last couple of years. Obviously, they haven't gotten anybody. But you know, those should be, like, ideal situations, and they're just not, because they're completely undesirable franchises on every level.
Yeah, it's just a weird situation. And again, you were saying it, 5 days into the season, they fire their coach, Earl Watson, who, granted, did not look like he was doing a bang up job there.
Was there another coach that was even a candidate for the worst coach in the league at the time he was fired? I don't know if there was anybody close.
No, I mean, you can't lose by like 46 your first game of the year, the home opener, and still somehow have another coach as the worst candidate. You know,
I think it was the worst. I think I remember hearing it on somebody's podcast that it was the worst loss in franchise history.
I mean, if it's not, it's got to be in the top three, right? Like, I can't imagine they have a lot of losses.
Points.
Yeah.
Like, my God.
Like, that's just brutal, you know? And listen, we can go off the rails on just the Suns and do an hour just on how nuts they are. But let's just kind of put that in the box and let's think forward a little bit.
Quickly, before we do that, where do you want to see Bledsoe go? I feel like that's the most intriguing thing out of this.
I realized I said that and wanted to ask you that question at the same time. I'm not sure where he fits. We saw in free agency, like, the point guard market died real quickly, and it felt like a lot of teams were set on that. But he's on a pretty good deal. You know, he's not a free agent this year. He's a free agent next year. I saw stuff where, like, the Knicks would be interested. I think the Knicks could be an interesting spot for him, get some athleticism and some stuff. But, again, in the long run, I don't know how you feel about that.
Yeah, I think they should definitely trade for a 28-year-old point guard whose contract is up at the same time that they have to pay Kristaps, and they're already paying over $50 million to Joakim Noah, Tim Hardaway, and Courtney Lee. I think that's a great idea.
I'm noticing some hints of sarcasm. Just hints.
No. Jews never use sarcasm, so.
No.
I brought this one up on Twitter. I think that Denver for something, Moutier, Fareed, and whatever pick the Suns insist on, I think is something that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, you know, the bigger question for me, too, is just where does he fit in terms of, like, does he shoot the ball? Well, I haven't watched Bledsoe in a long time just because I've avoided the Suns for a good amount of time.
He was awesome last year. Like, his best season. Good. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking at his stuff now. And, you know, and his three-point shooting is a little bit shaky, but in general still pretty good. You know, a few years ago, 37% from three. Last year was 33. You know, so I could see it. But still, yeah, a 20-point scorer kind of guy. He'd be perfect for Denver, actually, now that you mentioned that. Just because let Jokic kind of create. He doesn't have to have that pressure of being a creator, which is something I don't think he does a great job of running the offense, although he averages a good number of assists. I still don't feel like he's a great offensive creator. But, yeah, I think
they could use that help for sure at the point of attack on defense. Him and Gary Harris in the backcourt together I think would give them – you know, and you know, Chandler on the wing and Millsap, would having those guys and the flexibility they afford you would go a long way toward minimizing, you know, the defensive damage that having Jokic as your backline defender brings, which is, you know, not as bad as some people say it is, but still not good, and, you know, obviously worth it either way because he's so good offensively.
Right. Well, let's go to Jokic's struggles offensively. Starting the season a little bit slow on the offensive side of the ball in terms of scoring. What do you attribute that to? Do you think it's just, I mean, listen, small sample size galore. It's only been 2-3 games. It's still very early. Nobody should be jumping off the ship yet. But what do you make of the struggles he's had so far?
I think, you know, you mentioned it. Small sample size obviously plays a big part. You could probably find a 3-game stretch from last year, or it's 2 games, actually.
Right.
A two-game stretch from last year where he wasn't all that good scoring. The encouraging thing is that he's still rebounding. He still has a bunch of assists. I watched, actually, both of their games so far. They were randomly, like, on my watching schedule that I have. So I watched both of their games already. I think, in Utah, it has something to do with coming up against, obviously, Rudy Gobert. It's right. A tough matchup for anybody. Sacramento, he was just sort of not involved in a lot of the action in a weird way. I know he wound up with something like 7 assists or something like that, but I remember hearing it late in the game when the Nuggets were up by whatever it was, like 21 at that point or something. He'd only taken 3 shots midway through the fourth quarter, and I don't think he played the rest of the game. And that's something that, you know, he needs to be more involved than that. And, you know, he did do you know, a good deal of facilitating. He ran a couple of breaks that looked pretty good, but it seemed like more of their offense was running directly through Murray and Harris than is healthy for them. And I know they wound up winning the game, but they also played against the Kings, and they didn't score that healthy of a clip, of, you know, like we're used to them doing. So, you know, you got to just get him a little bit more involved with those elbow touches that he usually has. And, you know, because everybody knows that he likes to pass, eventually they're going to leave him open for some jumpers from that spot. When you do that, probably going to make him. He's a good shooter from that distance. Then they got to come up, and all of a sudden those cuts start coming a little bit more open than they were in that game too.
And you're right. Like, he's doing a great job doing the other things. He's averaging in two games 7.5 assists, which is pretty high, and leads the Nuggets, I believe, and 10.5 rebounds. So he's handling his other job well. The shot attempts is shocking to me, just because Will Barton and Paul Millsap both lead the team with 13.5 and 13. And I get it with Millsap. I feel like Barton, that might be a bit much, although he's shooting the piss out of it. You know,
and he's sort of like the de facto captain of the second unit offense, because I don't know how much Moutier shooting is good for them.
That, by the way, that's a role I really want in my life, is let me be the offensive threat on the second unit, getting to go up against the other team's second unit guys.
Yeah.
That's what I want in my life. If I ever had an NBA career, I think I would have focused on that. that would have been my goal, because you do get to take a lot more shots and have a little more freedom, because the other guys, your top dogs, are tired. I'm like, I'm just going to go gun for a bit, a la Jamal Crawford kind of thing. Let's talk about what you've seen so far. I mean, well, the other thing we got to talk about the first week of the season is just the injuries have been brutal. Going into it already, you know, Dante Exum looks like he's out for the season. That first game, the first 5 minutes, I mean, that Gordon Hayward injury,
I was like depressed for the rest of the night.
Yeah, it was devastating. It was just that watching that game, is at least the first half of that game, was so hard to watch after that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then look, the late game too. Iguodala was already out. Draymond missed the fourth quarter with what looked at the time like a very not good, I would say. Like, it didn't necessarily look bad, but very not good knee injury. And then after the game, we find out Chris Paul is out like somewhere between 2 to 4 weeks. The whole first night of the season, injury wise, was bad. And Isaiah was already out for the first game, too. Then you see the Cavs. Rose got hurt, and then Jordan Lin got hurt. Yeah. Like, so many guys. It's, like, ridiculous already.
Yeah, it's like, come on. All right, well, let's get that out for the week, and let's move on to the healthy part of the season from this time on. Injuries happen. It's a shitty break, but that's what, unfortunately, something that kind of comes through and we have to deal with. But I wonder if a little bit, if some of these injuries, I mean, listen, not the Gordon Hayward or even the Jeremy Lin one, I wonder if this has to do a little bit with preseason being shorter and moving that schedule up. You know, for some of these guys with strains and things like that, you know, your body's just not quite ready for that stuff. Some dudes use training camp to lose weight and get into playing shape, and with a shorter training camp, some of these guys just probably weren't ready.
Yeah, it's tough to, like, I don't know enough about, you know, biomechanics or physiology or whatever it is that explains all of this stuff to know whether there's a correlation or causation going on there. But wasn't the whole reason that they cut down on the preseason to cut down on injuries?
it's too much
of a risk.
It's just one of those. And that was my one thought about preseason, was like, a lot of these guys need these games to just get themselves back on, get ready for the season. Not necessarily in terms of knowing the offense or stuff, but just get their bodies ready to go again. So you're right. I mean, this was what we were supposed to have happen, and now we're having the exact opposite effect, which is kind of typical of the NBA. They make a change, and it's a reactive change, and it ends up biting them in the ass in the end.
I would be interested to know if this is out of the norm. Like, it definitely seems out of the norm because we're in it right now.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that there are, you know, injury researchers out there. I would like to know if this slate of injuries this early on is something that is as outside the realm of normal as we think it is.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's something that we'll have to look at. And I think teams will adjust. I think players will adjust also with knowing now. This is the first year we've had this short of a preseason and the season kind of starting off so early. I think guys will know that they got to start preparing themselves beginning of September and get ready to go. One guy who looks ready to go from the day one has been Giannis Antetokounmpo. I mean, he's right now the guy standing out as the MVP candidate so far.
He's pretty good.
Understatement, maybe?
I don't think it's out of, you know, the norm at this point. You know, I was very firm last year in my belief that, you know, when you answer the who is the guy that you want to have to build your team around for the next 10 years question, I was very firm in my belief that he is the number one answer. And I didn't think it was that close. Mm-hmm. Because of, you know, the injury concerns with Anthony Davis, first of all.
Right.
The guy misses 15-plus games a year. And then also, you know, when you look at, I think, you know, the three top candidates, the two of them and then Karl Towns, they're all basically the same size, but Giannis is the only one that's also a primary ball handler. You know, Davis and Towns can create for themselves, but somebody else is bringing the ball up the court and getting it to them. You cut that out entirely when you had Giannis. And I mean, he's just taken things to another level this year. I think he's taken like two jumpers the whole season, and he's still like putting up whatever it is, 39-6 or something. He's so good, man. It's awesome.
Yeah, his first three games, 37 points against Boston, which is a pretty good team, 34 points in a loss to LeBron and the Cavs, and 44 up against Portland, including the steal, game winning dunk, and game saving block. You know, in a matter of, this was the Kawhi Leonard version. You know, this was Kawhi Leonard last year on Harden, where he got the block and then hit the game-winning three. I mean, it was the same thing on Saturday night against Portland. And he's doing all this without the jumper, by the way. We should all be very afraid if he develops a jumper. Because like you said, he's only taking like maybe five shots outside of the paint.
I mean, and I just looked at it right now, so I brought up his base. First of all, he's taking 22 shots a game. Like, that's Westbrook territory. Mm-hmm. Second of all, he's taking 11 free throws a game. Like, to call these video game numbers is an insult to what he's doing. Like, 38, 10, and 5, 2.5 steals and a block per game, shooting 67% from the field. Like,
that's just ridiculous.
Half of his shots in the restricted area, like... My God.
And you can't even be mad about him taking 22 shots a game when he's making 67% of them. It's like he should take a few more. You
know? It's wild, man.
He's been on a tear. I obviously don't think he can keep up these numbers. They'll obviously take a dip at some point, but it's still a very impressive run he's on right now and really kind of getting going. And if he develops that three-point shot, God help us. Like, it's over.
I mean, like, it kind of looks like it's already over anyway, even if he doesn't have it. you know, like, we're all in trouble. Everybody's in trouble, whether he gets the jumper or not at this point. It's awesome.
Yeah, and I get a text message from my buddies every time, you know, the Bucks play. I know the Bucks play because I just get a text message that just says, Giannis. That's it. Giannis did something.
There's not much more to say, and also there's not really anybody doing much else at this point. So.
Yeah, and granted, still three games in, still super early, but it's been a very impressive kind of, almost like a coming out party, really kind of just going to work. Where do you see Milwaukee in the hierarchy in the East now that, you know, Boston takes a little bit of a dip with Gordon Hayward out? You know, I don't think they take, I still think they're a top four team. But where do you see Milwaukee in that range, you know, in the East?
Yeah, I think sort of the middle of the pack still. Like, I wrote about this in the offseason. Like, they obviously get so much surplus value from Giannis being as good as he is. And even, you know, to a lesser but still important extent from, like, Malcolm Brogdon being as good as he is compared to where he was drafted and his contract. And they get, you know, some surplus value from Chris Middleton as well. But so many other guys on their team are drags on the court and on the cap based on how much they're getting paid and what they do on the floor, that it sort of evens things out. Like, so I still see, I mean, unless Giannis is just going to do this all year, then they might get, you know, 50 wins or something like that. But you know, mid to high 40s, somewhere in like the 4 to 6 range, mm-hmm. seed wise, I think is where they'll probably fall, you know, with a ceiling of low 50s in the 2 seed.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I have them somewhere. I think I have them at kind of like a 4 seed. I think we might see. I'm not a big Toronto guy, so I'm not sure if they're going to fall or not. I think they don't have a bench. You know, one injury and that team's in trouble. So I kind of see that being an opportunity for Milwaukee to jump into that 4 spot. And I would love to see it, because my dream East playoff scenario is we get the Cavs playing the Sixers in the first round of the playoffs, and then I get a Cavs-Milwaukee playoff series in the second round. That's really just kind of what I'm hoping for selfishly, for my own viewing pleasure. So
I would love to see them play those two teams and then the Wizards.
Yeah, that'd be a lot of fun. The Wizards have talked enough shit. You know,
exactly.
They've been dodging us. They didn't want to play us. They didn't want to see us. Like, I kind of want to see that matchup as well in the playoffs. So that would be a dream scenario for me to watch all three of those teams take on the Cavs. That'd be a fun time. Another dream scenario of mine is to just have my refrigerator covered with gelato. I'm a diehard gelato fan. I don't know how much you know about that, Jared. I have found my favorite gelato place, Gelateria Uli's, which is in downtown in the Spring Arcade in between 5th and 6th Street. You can't go wrong there. They've opened up a new location in Beverly Grove area, right near the Grove. I believe it's 3rd and Crescent Heights for all those who live in L.A. Tons of flavors, vegan friendly. My personal favorite is Speculoos cookies. I have a pint of it in my freezer right now that I am going to be digging into after lunch. Great, super light meal. It's incredibly hot right now in L.A., so if anybody wonders about global warming, yes, it's actually affecting us. It's in October and in the 90s, so I'm hitting up my gelato shop today. I don't know how big of a fan you are about gelato, Jared, but it's something I really live for.
I would eat some gelato right now. It's, like, weirdly warm in New York. I could go for some gelato for sure.
There we go.
Can you guys, like, can you ship it from there out here? I don't know.
You know what? I'm going to hit them up. I'm going to get you some gelato, Jared. Give me a flavor. Give me a flavor you would like. Are you traditional Italian gelato? Like, you want some pistachio? You want banana? Or you want to go, they got, like, sweet corn. They have beet tarragon. They have Speculoos cookies, which is, like, my personal favorite.
These flavors are crazy. What the hell? I'll go for the cookies. That sounds awesome.
Done. I'm going to get you a pint. I am getting you a pint, and I'm going to send it to you. And then the next time I have you on the podcast, I want a gelato review.
I think that some of the outlets that I write for would be interested in gelato reviews.
I don't know who wouldn't be interested in a good gelato review. I personally think so. We've hit a lot of gelato now. Let's kind of get back to the NBA. So far, what has surprised you? And I get it, small sample size, but there's always a couple of things you're like, huh, I wonder if that's something that's going to last, or is this is pretty interesting. What has surprised you so far in the NBA season?
Russell Westbrook winding up 3rd on his team in shots in one game was surprising. That was the first game of the year when they played the Knicks. I can't imagine that he will wind up 3rd on the team in shots for, like, a super long time again. What else has been surprising to me? I've watched a bunch of Utah as well, and they are pushing things in an interesting way to make up for the fact that they don't have Gordon Hayward anymore, and their half-court offense is probably not going to be quite as good. I wrote about this morning. Their average possession after a defensive rebound last season lasted 14.1 seconds. That was the second longest of any team in the league. This season, they are at 11.9 seconds, and that 2.2 second jump is, I think it was 6th in the league so far. So they're doing making a concerted effort. You know, every team talks about wanting to get into their offense more quickly. The Jazz early on are making a pretty concerted effort to follow through on it.
Yeah, I'm actually pretty excited for the Jazz. I think they have a chance to compete for a playoff spot despite having lost Gordon Hayward and all that. I think they're still going to be a top defensive team. I'm super excited about Donovan Mitchell. Like, he's looked really good for them. And Joe Ingles is another guy who's shooting the piss out of the ball to start the season. It's been a fun thing to ride. I think Rubio fits that team perfectly. I think better than George Hill even. Like, he comes right in, and it was just the offense goes. And I wonder how much of that, of his play and his ability to kind of create, affects that, you know, kind of like shortening that, how long each offensive possession is.
Yeah, some interesting things have been going on with them. Like, I think Ricky Rubio has fit in really well, but also teams are sort of cramping their spacing offensively when they have Rubio, Gobert, and Favors on the court together. There's just not enough, even though Ingles is shooting like 90% from three or whatever it is.
It's ridiculous.
There's not enough room out there for them to operate in the way they should. That's, you know, partly why they're trying to get those targeted breaks. So that's something that's happening. And then, but when their bench units come in, they have Mitchell and Burks who are capable of handling, Joe who can handle and stretch the floor, you know, and then they have Mitchell's Tabo and Udo to defend. And I really, really like that bench unit. I think that's going to be the best bench defense in the league. And when you pair that with Gobert holding down the defense with the starters, they are going to be a top five defense. Like, I think it may be not top two or three just because, you know, some of their guys that are their better defenders are going to have to expend more energy offensively than they're used to. But they're going to be really good defensively. And to me, it's just a matter of them figuring out ways to stay a step ahead of the defense in the half court. It's going to be the difference between them being not in the playoffs or being one of those bottom couple of seeds.
Yeah. One guy and team that's kind of surprised me a bit is Evan Turner of the Portland Trail Blazers. Everybody killed them last year for that contract. I might have been the only person to actually defend them on a regular basis, and thank God, because he's coming through pretty well right now. Having a good start of the season, averaging 13 points a game. He's shooting a surprising 42% from three, again, early, but he's doing a great job of posting up smaller guards and creating out of that, which is something I've been hoping to see more of, and I'd like to see him play more with Dame and CJ, kind of let him play make while those dudes run off screens. But he's been a surprise so far. I know they blew that game against Milwaukee, but besides that, it's been a pretty impressive run to see. Like, it looks like he's finally a lot more comfortable and a lot more fluid and getting kind of comfortable in that offense. Have you had a chance to watch Portland much yet?
I have not gotten a chance to watch Portland yet. I know that in their first two games, they played two of probably the five worst teams in the league in Phoenix and Indiana. So I'm curious going forward to see how much that played into the fact that they won those two games by a combined like 50 points. They did play, a competitive game against the Bucks. I didn't get a chance to watch that one, but, you know, I saw the end of it, and, you know, the controversy over whether or not there was a foul or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah. Did you think it was a foul?
I think it's a tough call to make if you're going to call that a foul. I don't know that. Like, clearly his hand was on CJ's hip.
Right.
But I don't know that it impeded him in any way.
Yeah. And when I looked at it, you know, kind of watching CJ, it didn't seem to really slow him down. It's just he lost the ball and went to go get it. So, you know, if maybe he flopped in that situation, which we don't want to encourage, but if he does, maybe he gets that call. But
yeah, you know, James Harden gets a hand on his hip there. He's like falling on the floor.
Oh, he's
just to make sure that the foul gets called.
He's falling and spinning down as he comes, you know, just to make sure, you know, it looks as obvious as possible. But, you know, and he'd probably get the call. Besides the Suns, because they're god awful. Who's going to be the other worst team in the NBA? You know, is it Indiana? Is it Chicago? Where, you know, Lakers? Lakers have looked atrocious as well. You know, what do you think?
Yeah, Chicago, the Knicks. Dallas looks really bad in those first few games too. If guys have to miss time at it, like, they're thin too.
Mm-hmm.
If anybody has to miss time, that's really bad for them. You know, Curry is already out. There's a couple teams that are going to be really. I think Indiana's going to be pretty bad too. I know they had a good game, I think, on the first night of the season when they played the Nets, which was like the fastest paced game in 8 years or something like that.
No defense was played. It was like 140 to like 132.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are the teams I think are in the mix as the worst. And the Nets, I would imagine, even though they're, I think, 2-1 to start the year.
Yeah,
they're going to be in that mix too, especially without Lynn.
Yeah, the Nets looked pretty good. I mean, Russell has done a good job so far and just kind of getting in the flow. He's putting up good numbers, but really doing a good job just kind of creating for the others as well. You know, Crab got going.
Now that I'm looking at it too, the Nets have like the easiest start to the season imaginable.
Mm-hmm.
They played the Pacers, the Magic, the Hawks, and now they play the Magic again.
If they can only play the Magic on a nightly basis, that's another team that just has a crazy, I have no idea what the hell they're doing.
Yeah.
Plan. I mean, you know, somebody floated around a Bledsoe for Aaron Gordon kind of deal, and I go like, you know, those two teams are dumb enough to do it.
Yes, they are.
You know, that's definitely something I could see them both doing. That's the thing. What have you seen of the Lakers? Have you watched the Lakers much at all yet?
Yeah, I caught the Lakers against the Suns, which was actually a pretty good game. That was the one game that the Suns weren't an epic disaster, and that was the game where Lonzo played actually pretty well. And I caught the Lakers against the Clippers, too. The Clippers game, obviously, was pretty bad, and Lonzo was pretty bad. I thought he had an interesting way of getting around the whole idea that he can't shoot moving to his right. He, a couple times in the game against the Clippers, drove to his right and gave like one of those Rondo fakes before spinning around to his left with his pivot foot and then putting up a shot. He airballed it on the first one, but he made it on the second one. So it kind of worked for him, once he got the timing down.
Well, he's probably, if you asked him, he'd be like, I'm 50% from going to my right. What do you want me to do? No need to change anything. The thing about for me with Lonzo Ball is they got to be in transition. If they're not in transition, I don't think he's great in the half court. He can create and he can make passes, but when you want to get the most out of Lonzo Ball and really kind of exploit his special skill, it's in transition. I mean, he made that pass against the Suns, off of a missed free throw to outlet to Corey Brewer, who hits Ingram for a dunk. And things like that, but he's also kind of a prisoner to the talent around him. You know, if those guys aren't making shots, Ingram's struggling early and things like that, that's a problem because his game is predicated on, I'm going to make you guys look good. But if you guys suck, I can't make you look good.
Yeah, it's I also don't know why they're like trying to have Ingram create a lot for himself at this point. He's just not strong enough against stout defenders. Like, he tried to drive on Gallo in the first half of that Clippers game and it did not work out well for him. He basically like bounced off of Gallo's body and threw the ball off the top of the box on the glass when he was going against, I think, Wes Johnson in the second half. He had a little bit more success, so like he can do it against some defenders but not against like most starting threes. So I think that they need to do more of, like you said, getting out in transition. Not only does it play to Lonzo's strengths, but it will help some of the other guys on the team get to places where they can be successful too. And maybe like not play Andrew Bogut over Zubac, who just hasn't played so far.
Yeah, the whole run, the kid Ennis losing his backup role to Alex Caruso, who then loses his role to Josh Hart last night. You know, like, he's just playing with lineups. My question to you about this, is Luke Walton a good coach?
I think so. Like, I think that he knows how to put guys in position to succeed, but also likes to, like I said with Ingram, I guess it's sort of like testing whether he can succeed when he's not put in a good position to succeed. If that makes sense. He did that a bunch last year with Julius Randle, where he had him do things that aren't necessarily in his wheelhouse to see if he could stretch and do some more stuff. There were certain things he was successful with, handling the ball a little bit more, and there were certain things he wasn't successful with, trying to blitz pick and rolls.
I just don't see any semblance of any sort of offensive plan in the half court.
Yeah, that's tough. Like, there's, they don't seem to have a cohesion to them. It's also, you know, tough bits. Like, in that first game, they were playing without KCP, and they were playing, like, Ingram with Nance, and who else was on the wing? And Dang. Like, that didn't make a ton of sense. They've got guys playing, like, 6 feet off of Lonzo to try to cut off any access he has to the lane. Like, it's tough in the half court with the mix of talent that they have, because Lonzo's their really only off-the-dribble creator, but teams are obviously daring him to do other things at the start. And that's why, you know, they were able to get into more stuff in Phoenix, because he stepped up, made a couple threes off the dribble, and that opened things up for them.
And those were wide-open threes. Like, I mean, there wasn't a Phoenix defender in, like, 12-mile range of Lonzo Ball when he was getting up to shoot. It was such an embarrassment defensively on both teams, to be honest. It was still a really incredibly high-scoring game. Both teams were terrible defensively, but, like, just, like, that was the difference. Like Patrick Beverley has given us the blueprint for how to guard Lonzo Ball. It's basically get into his ass. And Beverley kind of went overboard, was a bit of an asshole about it.
Whoa, Patrick Beverley went overboard?
right. Shocking as that may be.
That never happens.
He may have gotten carried away. I don't know. But you know, but that's the kind of thing. It's like, get into him. We saw it with De'Aaron Fox against him in Kentucky. You know, really, if you really get into Lonzo Ball and make him uncomfortable, it's a problem for him. So I think that was a blueprint, and Phoenix was just like, "Eh, we don't need that. We're not going to do that." And granted, I think it's like Devin Booker who's guarding him, who, you know, probably couldn't guard me, to be honest. So
he wouldn't. The problem with Devin Booker, I don't know if it's that he can't play defense. It's, he seems entirely uninterested in even trying to play defense. Like, he's got a good frame and long arms. Like, he should be able to play defense. He just sort of doesn't want to.
Yeah, that's hard for me as a guy who wanted to coach and go through that stuff. Like, defense matters to me. So seeing that just drives me fucking batshit crazy. And,
like, I usually hate the defense is all about effort line of criticism, mm-hmm. because it's about so much more than that. You know, positioning and knowledge of angles and knowing where your teammates are going to be and knowing what the other team wants to accomplish with certain sets and, you know, timing and game plans. Like, it's about so much more than effort, but effort has to be a part of it. Like, if you don't put in the effort, you can't do any of those other things. And he just doesn't seem to want to do anything on that end of the floor.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's an IQ thing. Like, you touched on it. There's so many different things that we see from the guys who are great defenders, it's just a smart IQ of like, oh, he's going to make this pass here right now. Like, this is the move he wants to make. I can take that away. And things like that.
I always use the example of Tony Allen. I did a story a couple of years ago on defensive communication and, you know, how important it is, obviously, to all good defenses and, you know, even why young teams struggle with it. You know, teams that have sort of like a sixth sense about things because they've been together for so long. And Tony Allen, when I was talking to him about it, first of all, was like, you know, the Grizzlies have this system where, you know, Marc Gasol is obviously the guy that belts out the stuff from the back. He's the backline communicator, tells everybody where to go, what to expect. A lot of times, you know, Mike Conley will sort of steal the play call. And, you know, whenever he hears it or spots it from the corner of his eye, whatever the coach is saying, and he will relay that back to Mark, and then Mark barks out instructions. And I asked Tony Allen about this, and he was like, yeah, I don't listen to any of that shit. Like, because all he did, like, his job is separate from that, or at least it was in Memphis, where all he did was just make life as difficult as possible for the opposing, you know, best perimeter scorer. And one of the examples he used was, you know, where he was guarding a guy in the corner, or sorry, at the top of the key, who was coming to set a pin down for Dirk. And, you know, he was getting told by Mark, like, you know, screen, wherever it's coming, and, you know, your guy's going to flare out to the corner. And he's like, I just didn't listen because I know when they set a pin down for Dirk, he's either coming into the middle of the lane or coming up to the free throw line. So all I did was just stand in his way and make them go to the other side of the floor.
Right.
Like, you got to know what to expect and not just try.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a lot more than just effort. And it kind of takes a shot at defense if you think it's just an effort thing. Jared, I'm gonna ask you about the Knicks, and then I'm gonna let you go. I want to know your thoughts. Yeah, exactly. Your boys, the Knicks. What are you hoping for this season? What do you want to see? You know, kind of as the season goes on.
I want to see one Frank and Kristaps pick and pop. One. Like, Frank has been healthy for, like, a total of 8 days since they drafted him or something like that. So, like, you know, the kid just has to get on the court at some point. You know, I think that the result from the first two games where Kristaps is averaging 32-8 and they're 0-2 is basically ideal.
Right.
It would be nice if they were getting there by playing Hernan Gomez and Ntilikina and Dotson instead of Kylo Quinn and Ron Baker and Lance Thomas. But, you know, in general, Kristaps being awesome and then losing is pretty good.
You're okay with that. So gunning for the number one pick.
Yeah, I'm pretty shameless about it. Like, I don't care. Like, they're not good. They're not going to be good for a couple of years. Like, get me Doncic or Bagley or Porter or one of these guys, and I'll be happy to root for them to be good next year.
Do you have a preference?
Yet. I haven't watched enough of those guys yet. Right. You know, I haven't watched any of Bagley or Porter yet. I have enough on my plate watching high school and then, you know, guys that are coming into the draft that year. I can't watch guys that are not, like, actual prospects yet.
I mean, you're talking to a guy who refuses to watch college basketball and struggles in March. So it's not a surprise there. Jared, tell the people where they could find you. You said you just written a piece today that came out. Where is it? Where can everybody find you? And what they can look forward to next from you?
Yeah, if you follow me on Twitter at JADubin5, you can find all my work that I tweeted out. I'm at a bunch of different places. The piece I referenced from this morning on the Jazz is at The Step Back at Vice Sports, possibly some other places as well. I'm all over the place. I'm on people's podcasts and doing all kinds of stuff. CBS, everywhere. I'm a lot of places. So,
well, hold on. You go on other people's podcasts, man?
Not today. This is the only podcast I'm doing today.
Okay.
I have been on other podcasts in the past. And, you know, if you want to lock me up, it's not that expensive.
I can only pay you in I can only pay you in gelato if you're okay with that.
I'll take the gelato, but that's not an exclusive deal.
Gotcha. Fair enough. Jared, I really appreciate you coming on, man.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
And that's it for our show today. Be sure to rate us, like us, leave reviews on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher, wherever else you get your podcasts, and check out all our amazing content on thejumpball.net. Have yourselves a great week.